What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Kwaku Farke. Kwaku is the CTO and founder at Navi, which is a startup coach and mentorship platform. So we talk a lot about finding the right mentors for you and a problem that happens with a lot of startups, which is you get a lot of advice and you hear a lot of different things, but you don't know if it's right for you at that time. So we talk about the different stages of growing a company and kind of like the people you want to listen to in each stage. We talk about problems faced in very early stage development, like pre-launch to just having launched, which is what Kwaku's going through right now. He's actually a developer. He's the CTO. He's doing a lot of the coding, and there are certain things that keep coming up. This is his third company, so he has a lot of experience in that space. And finally, we talk about serendipity and how that's something Kwaku lives his life by, is just chance encounters that'll result in lucky and positive outcomes. That's actually how we met, which the story's in this episode. Yeah, I had a great time talking to him. I'm glad I finally got him on the show, and I hope you enjoy this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
Firestone.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Firestone
and Woodstocks. They got a Woodstocks pizza out here too, but I'd say Firestone and Woodstocks pizza are the top two spots, and they're right across the street from each other too. So everyone's just kind of, you know, that's the go-tos.
All right, well, let's get this thing started for the listener. This is Kwaku Farke. He's been involved in a couple startups throughout the years, but right now he's focusing on Navi, which is it's a startup coaching and mentorship platform. How's it going, Kwaku?
Good, good. Excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you. So we've met a couple times, like going through startup events, crypto events around the San Diego space. What's been kind of your background in the startup world? Because I've had some conversation with you, but I'm actually really curious, like, how did it all lead up to, you know, you working at Slack, getting acquired, and now the current company you're starting? You got two things going. So I'm really curious, man. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is a long story. It started since college, really. Cal Poly, where I went, is definitely entrepreneurial focused. The whole motto is learn by doing. That's their slogan. So, you know, when you go there, we were kind of thrown in the fire early on. And I think that helped when it comes to startups and entrepreneurship, just jumping into things that, you know, I knew nothing about and just kind of trying to make my way around it and figure it out. And I feel like that's a lot to do with startups. So coming out of college, I ended up, you know, of course, had ideas and stuff that I wanted to work on. But, you know, another big part is team. So I ended up meeting some friends who, you know, were starting up a company, a software startup, and jumped on board with them. And so really my startup journey started right at the end of college, where the decision was, hey, do I want to keep looking for a job, or just dive in and gain some experience and have some ownership in what I'm doing early on with the startup. So I went that latter route right after college, and I was kind of working, doing the moonlighting thing, working on the side, trying to make my poor college ends met, and you know, working on the startup too, just trying to build the product. Yeah. And you know, that ended up we ended up getting into an accelerator program up in the Bay Area. So that was kind of our first big win a few months in. And that was really what opened the door for me as far as like how big, you know, the startup world is, and just how many people are working in the space. Mm. And, you know, like just different technologies that are going into it and all the different factors of startups as well. Just being in that accelerator program, you know, being with a bunch of people, and I was young at the time too, you know, I was 22, 23. You know, my co-founders were that same age as well. I was a little younger, and just being exposed in this kind of dungeon office area with, you know, 50 just hella smart people, and just being able to soak all of that in for a few months. You know, we were living in an old converted hotel downtown that they, you know, turned into a dorm and stuff. So it was like, you know, that was my life for a few months right after college. And that just kind of taught me that grind and kind of the hard work that goes into startups. So
that's pretty funny. I can imagine growing up in a relatively small town, like SLO. And I remember San Luis Obispo when visiting, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like kind of secluded. It's like kind of in the middle of like some agriculture. Like it just feels like it's separated from everywhere else. And then all of a sudden you get thrown into San Francisco in an accelerator program, or like the Bay Area. And you're just like, wow, this is an entirely different world. But it definitely opened your eyes, I'm guessing.
Facts. Yeah. It's San Luis Obispo is interesting because it's a beautiful place, very small, you know, California coast. So it's popular, but it's so far from the big cities. It's, you know, 3.5 hour drive from to LA, 3.5 to the Bay. So, you know, it's kind of isolated, like you said, just isolated around agriculture.
Spot. But the nature is beautiful. You just kind of want to like play in a forest when you're in SLO.
Facts, man. You know, I love, you know, just running around, hiking, beaches, you know, grass area, you know, just a lot of my energy just comes from being outside, and I appreciate that. And I got a lot of that growing up in SLO. So
One thing that I'm wondering is, where did you learn your developer skills? Because I know a big thing is you've been the CTO. You've always been on the developer coding side. Where did that come from? Did you learn that in college? Did you teach yourself? How did that show up?
My story programming kicks off in high school, actually, being a terrible high school student. I took the AP computer science class and test, and still, you know, really love and appreciate my teacher, Ms. Fecho, for, you know, just being cool and stuff, and just motivating me and inspiring me. But I took that AP computer science test and I got a 2 out of 5, I think. So, you know, failed it miserably. And, you know, I just didn't do well. But then I decided to do computer engineering in college because I was like, oh, I'm great at this, right? And, you know, then, you know, learned a lot there as far as just data structures and stuff. But again, the learn by doing, just kind of putting your head down and like realizing, you know, it is a solvable problem. You just got to figure out how. And so kind of learn some programming in college for real. But what's even funnier is that the programming languages I learned in college, none of them I use today or at the time when I got into startups. So kind of learned the principles behind them, but not the specific languages.
What's your current favorite language?
favorite right now has got to be, you know, JavaScript with the TypeScript typing on there. Just, you know, JavaScript's ubiquitous now, so it's everywhere. Yeah.
I'm acting like I know what any of this means.
Hey, you're acting right, man. You're making sense. That's a learn good question doing. To ask.
I'm just gonna start getting in there. All right.
Yeah.
So the current startup you're working on is Navi. You mind kind of going into, number one, what problem you're solving, but also what you're doing, what your role in that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So Navi, we consider Navi an innovation platform. Innovation platform that really enables organizations to provide personalized coaching and mentorships to the entrepreneurs and innovators in their network. So it's a startup coaching and mentorship platform, and it's, you know, meaningful to me, obviously, because of my career in startups and kind of coming full circle to this situation where I can, you know, work on my startup to help other startups while also helping my startup. So really appreciate it. And it's, you know, it's how it started. We started it a few years ago in a kind of just part-time bootstrapped way where we were focused on the problem a lot of entrepreneurs and really most folks face when it comes to having a goal. So let's say in the startup space, having a venture, having an idea, and wanting to, you know, validate it, wanting to scale it, wanting to turn it into something, and understanding that in today's world, there's a ton of resources available to help, you know, you do that, whether it's, you know, YouTube videos or books or talks or, you know, mentors out there, or just, you know, accelerator programs, incubator programs, venture capital. There's like an abundance of resources available to help you start up, which is fantastic. The issue we feel like there is that the understanding which resources to use at what time and why you need that resource at that time, and navigating through all of these resources. And then for a wide subset of the world and our, you know, our country too, just not having access to those resources, frankly, because you're just not in a, you know, you're underrepresented. You're not in a place in like a privileged place to have access to those resources. So it's all about resources and access as an entrepreneur.
Okay.
And what we wanted
like resource
to do.
Management.
Right. Resource management and guidance, effectively helping to guide entrepreneurs as they're going through the journey of creating their startup, creating their business, helping them overcome any challenges, any problems they face. And so we decided to focus our solution on the coaching mentorship interface side of things, where we felt like that's a touch point that a lot of entrepreneurs have and is critical to a lot of entrepreneurs' success. And so how can we really advance that and progress that interface so that it's more efficient, it's more scalable, both on the coach side and on the startup side, just making that process better for both parties.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can totally see the problem of there is a lot. No one tells you what to start on or how to go about it. There's a lot of resources on starting a company and like the different steps of it. But I guess everyone's journey is different. Yeah. Everyone requires different kind of steps along the way. I remember one issue that I faced is I was when I was working on a project with a friend. I looking back, I wish I would have spent less time on like the marketing side and more time on talking directly to users. I didn't know when you just launched something, you'd want to talk to the users and try to get them on the platform. I was trying to like sign up to go on podcasts and talk about it, or like just looking for ways of getting it out there rather than going directly to the, like there was just so much things, even just saying that I thought of like three other mistakes I made. Like there are so many things that you're not really taught or told what to do from the beginning. And I guess like, yeah, I mean, finding a mentor is incredibly important, but even finding mentors that are right for you at that time is just as difficult.
Yeah, everything you said is spot on. And, you know, to touch on your first point, that's what we want to do naturally as people. You know, we want, especially in the startup space, we want to contribute. We want to add value. Like we're all in this thing to grow and achieve something. And so naturally we go to, you know, what we're good at, and we're like, hey, let me just do this really, really well. And that totally makes sense. Hey, if you're good at marketing, like, shoot, I can't build a product, but I can market the thing. I'm gonna go market. Or in my case, it was a lot of, especially early on, and to your other point, mistakes. You know, there's always a ton of mistakes no matter what. And that's one of the key points, you know, when I'm coaching someone or we're coaching, really, is just letting them know up front that, like, hey, the guidance or advice I'm giving is, you know, just take it with a grain of salt no matter what. Like, use your own intuition and understand that it's a process. So, you know, it's all about the feedback. But, you know, for me, being on the technical side of things, my focus early on was always, hey, the more, you know, the better the product we build and the more features it has and the more convenient it is to use, you know, the better it is for the customers, the more it, the product will sell itself. And sure, that's intuitive, but also to your point, when you don't have customers and you're not talking to those customers and understanding exactly what their problems are and then optimizing to solve for the problems that they really feel, all of a sudden feature creep, scope creep comes in and you're just building a lot of whatever that isn't actually valuable. And so in my early days, and even to this day, you know, I still have to keep it in mind of the fact of, hey, I can build these things and it feels like I'm adding great value, but that might not be the best thing for me to be spending my time on or for me to be prioritizing to progress my startup. And those are the practices and philosophies that we're hoping we can create like an economy around, frankly, to help help anyone receive that same advice in those moments where it doesn't feel intuitive.
Yeah, dude, that's pretty awesome that you guys are doing that. One thing that's coming to my mind is, since I am more focused, like I was always more on the, I don't code. So I was always more on like the marketing, sales, and like outward facing customer talking side. What are some problems that are faced early on developers? So like you guys right now, you're right on the edge of about to launch. You're either just launched or about to launch. Is that, am I getting that right?
Right. So we're in a closed beta situation where it's weird where we have customers who are on, but we're in this launch mode still.
So for like a brand new first time startup developer, same shoes you're in right now, like same kind of era, what kind of mistakes would you guide them away from?
So, don't build really. And it's the hardest thing. And I'm not even following my advice to a T. Where even in our startup Navi right now, there's still plenty of customer and problem validation we could and should be doing before we kind of commit to commit resources to building a solution towards them. Is don't build. The, you know, understanding that skill and that ability to build something doesn't go away. And so you can do that when, you know, when you're ready. And it's always, we want to be proactive. So it's like, it's kind of the field of dreams. Like if you build it, they'll come, but that's really, you want to avoid that. Cause as a startup, again, it's, you know, your resources are limited. So you really got to think about how to prioritize. So I would say, you know, don't build, talk, you know, effectively go talk to, go figure out who your audience is that you're targeting and get to the point where you're really, really comfortable reaching out to, whether, and even if it's getting cold rejected or actually having a follow-up conversation, get to a really, really a point where you feel comfortable and you feel like you can convey your startup's message effectively to customers and are able to have really just interviews, conversations with them to collect feedback. Get to the point where you're comfortable with that, because then you'll be able to start acquiring insights into their problems. And then that association that, you know, as a developer, as an engineer, as an entrepreneur, we start to see these patterns and say, hey, this is, you know, this is the problem maybe I should be focused on, or this is where I can, you know, contribute the most value.
From what I'm gathering, it's instead of focusing so much on building, because you don't fully know what the customer wants, go and talk to the customers to the point where you can stand in their shoes, to where you understand exactly where their pains are. You could talk to someone randomly and be like, I know what problem you're feeling. I know what would make it better. Then you build, because you know what that's like, so you know what would fix that problem.
Yep, and that's spot on, and it makes me think of you know, a way we would try and share that in a story, and this is just how it goes in the coaching space, where a lot of the times it's just trying to, like, you know, rehash memories and experiences of advice and share it as best you can. But we, one of our things we talked about, you know, I'm gonna mess this up, but we would always talk about, hey, if you were like, if you wanted to start a grocery store, like, what would your best strategy be? And it's like, no, don't think about, you know, okay, how am I going to get all the food and, like, get it all in a location? I need to buy, like, a lot and, like, get a building and stuff and house all this stuff. And then there's supply chain and all that stuff. Don't worry about any of that. Like, first of all, you got to figure out stuff like, well, what do people even want to buy? Do people even need a grocery store sort of thing? Go stand out on the street, you know, go to your Costco, go buy a bag of apples and go stand out on the street in front of the Costco and see how many people are trying to buy an apple but don't want to go into Costco to buy it. And, you know, figure out problems in a very lean way as opposed to going and building the whole store first and then realizing, oh, I could have just stood out front and sold some apples, you know.
Cost a lot less than a store.
Exactly.
Have you ever watched Rick and Morty?
Not enough to say I do.
There's this, so one marketing thing that someone taught me was based off of the writer of Rick and Morty. Every single episode follows the exact same story circle. It's called, you could Google it, it's called the Dan Harmon story circle. And it's like 1 through 8, it's a full circle, and it starts with, like, before the episode, this is happening. During the episode, this, like, they want something, they get what they want, but a really big problem happens because of that. So then they enter back to their, like, original state. Except they're changed. Like, they enter back to where they were at the beginning of the episode, but, like, completely changed based on what happened. It was, like, really interesting. And what the guy was telling me, he's a copywriter, and what he was saying is you want to know your customer's story circle. And then he showed me proof. He's like, so you guys hired us to help with sales and marketing. Let me show you this. And he went through what their customer story circle, and I saw my company fill that, like, needs so much, this pain point of, like, you're a growing company, you're a growing startup, and then you want to have an SDR team, but you don't really, like, you're trying a bunch of different things. Whatever he went through, it was a while ago, whatever he went through, it, like, fit the nail on the head. And it really hit me that sometimes, you know, it doesn't have to be Rick and Morty's Dan Harmon story circle, but a lot of times it could be, like, the hero's journey that, like, a lot of movies follow, like movies like Lord of the Rings or, like, Star Wars, the big epics, they follow the hero's journey plot line. Right. But a lot of times the concept that I took from it was, if you map out your customer's journey, a lot of times you can fit certain things inside of the, of like how these movie things are. And what you want to do is, as a company, your product is the bridge between what they kind of, like, where they are and what gets them to that next level, what turns them into the hero.
Promised land.
Yeah. The promised land. Like, your product is that. And it was a really helpful way of just, like, visualizing that. But that's when I realized it. I was like, before I can even do that, I gotta know who this customer is. Like, I gotta know what their journey looks like, and find enough journeys to where it's a pattern.
Right. I love that, because like you're saying, it's something that the outcome is exactly what you wanted, but the means, like the journey to get there, is different than what you might have thought. Like, it's less about, hey, I need to think about this thing and, like, you know, make the decision. It's more about, okay, like, let me think about, put myself in the customer's shoes a little bit, and then all of a sudden the story, the sales story, the marketing vision, you know, comes to life, because I took that time to sit with those customers and really kind of think about how to bridge that gap. And, you know, we actually have one of the modules in our curriculum we call the sales story, and it's kind of based on that, like you're saying, just understanding how to pitch, but how to identify and put yourself and put your narration, your story, in the shoes of your in your customer's shoes,
yeah,
and pitch and really help them visualize the problem with what you're marketing, and then see the promised land, and then see, hey, how is my product going to help you get to the promised land? It's a whole story, and if you follow it, you'll get to the place where, like, you'll realize the only way I could have gotten this story so tight is by talking to these customers.
Yeah, it's totally true. And then one of the things that helped me the most, another like kind of analogy like this or story that's really helped me, and it'll fit in well with what we're talking about, is, have you seen the thing that it's, I'm sure you're familiar with Super Mario, like it's just Mario takes a mushroom and becomes like a bigger, stronger version. Mm-hmm. What I saw for like marketing and copywriting, what you want to sell, like if Mario is your customer and your product is like that shroom that makes him bigger, you're not selling the shroom, you're selling Super Mario. Like you're selling the result of your product. You're not selling your product itself. That's what really people resonate with in marketing, is they resonate with the result. And one thing that really helped me understand is a lot of people who list out features. Like if I'm sitting there looking to buy a TV, I'm not going to care how many like pixels it shows me. I just want it to look crystal clear. I want crystal clear TV. I don't care about the pixels. Or like, hey, like that.
This thing turns on in a second. You're going to see that crystal clear screen fast, sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Less so this has got like smart TV. So like, you know, if you want to hook up Netflix, the remote's got the Netflix button. It's like, okay.
Well, yeah. Rather than saying that, just say Netflix in 2 seconds. Done. Press a button. There you go. Like it's the result. And I think that's something that's really helped, honestly, me in marketing and whatnot.
And to tie it back to on the developer and software and technical side, it's the same sort of thing where, you know, we can build all of this stuff and it looks great. And it's like, hey, look at this mushroom. It looks amazing. Like, you know, it'll treat you right. Like it looks fantastic. But then, you know, customer might just be like, well, like I just want it to be bigger. Like, I don't care. Like you got like a nice looking mushroom. I just want to be bigger. So focus on what can get them that outcome. It might not even need to be a website. You know, we started with, for the past few years, we started with emails, and we were sending emails that had Google Doc links to our curriculum. And then, you know, we moved over to Slack, where we started using Slack workflows and to share our curriculum. And you know, that still created a constraint because organizations had to have a paid Slack plan in order to, you know, use the workflows. And that was a struggle for us, but it was still a constraint. And now once we honed in on the problem enough, we're like, hey, we can afford to build our own website to optimize on the problem we're solving for.
So I see what you were talking about earlier. First, you were just selling apples. Then you got a fruit stand, and now you're like, you know what? We should make the whole store.
Facts, yeah, It's not a great looking store right now, but we're working on it.
that's good. At least the store's got AC. Yeah,
absolutely will. Yeah.
All right. Now to change a little bit, let's talk about kind of like your habits and anything you got there. Do you have a set routine that goes throughout your day?
I wish. and that's something, it's kind of, it's one of the trade-offs right now, you know, and I'll be honest, it's trying to put in the work to build, you know, this product has taken me off my habits. And along with that, you know, leaving my job a few months ago and then jumping right into, you know, Navi full time, and trying to build these features fast in a time to get them released in time has knocked me off my habits. And it's something that I'm aware of. I want to adjust. So, no, I don't have any good habits right now, but if I did,
Like what's the ideal morning for you or something like that? Ideal day.
I like to work out in the morning. I like to think that it gives me better, you know, just chemistry overall throughout the day. I'll believe that, but also I'm probably, if I don't work out in the morning, then I probably won't do it later in the day. So I like to work out, and I like to not a long one either. I like to try and, you know, just keep it quick enough where I'm just moving at a high pace and being fast. Like at that moment, I'm concentrating on it. And that's kind of my theme. I like to, when I'm focused on something, I like to just try and bust it out, do it, not spend too much time kind of just distracted by it or other things. So try and do a quick workout, you know, eat something healthy. I try and stick with like fruits and like light stuff early on in the day. Meditate too. I found meditating just for like 5 minutes a day is really helpful, just to like kind of walk back my thoughts maybe that might have been creeping in and stuff. So I try and do that in the morning too. Starting to work, typically we'll have a meeting or something, but I like to try and block off my time in like a couple hour chunks. So realizing, especially in this day and age of you know, remote work and working from home, realizing, you know, hey, I have all of this time. Let me not try and just, you know, use it all on working, but try and just set up times where I can have goals of like, let me try and finish this task in the next couple hours, and then I'll know, okay, if I did great, if not, I'll get up and take a break. So you know, just trying to focus my work on in kind of increments, and then, you know, just try and eat right too, try and get out. So anytime you know, I got a friend or something who might have an event going on, or you know how, you know, we link up and stuff when we're going to different you know, startup or crypto events and stuff. So just try and get out and to one of those events, you know, a couple of those events a week, just to try and like just stay connected in my
stay
world.
Plugged into the world and everything.
Exactly. So I'd say routine wise that's probably, those are the things that stand out that are, you know, related to work in a sense, and kind of like my work style, as far as habits.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is there anything that you'd like to remove currently that you're currently doing? Any habits or kind of, I don't know, negative things that you wish you could take away?
I think on that work note too, and where we are at, and understanding the trade-offs that I made a decision on, is just really avoiding burnout and trying to have a better, be more prepared in my planning. Right now, because again, I think of this, this is mostly the case because of this transition from, you know, leaving my job to just jumping right into, you know, building out our product for our startup. Is not having a, you know, I couldn't tell you right now what exactly I should be working on next week. And that's nice because we're about Monday, we're launching this feature that I've been working on the past, you know, month for. So that's great. But it means that come Monday, I'm going to be trying to think about, okay, what's next? What's the next, you know, top priority thing that I could be doing?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden a wave of thoughts is just going to come through and be like, oh, well, there's this thing you're thinking about and that and this and that. And it's not going to help me just, you know, buckle down and focus on the next thing. And it's going to make it, it even more likely that, you know, I'll get burnt out or exhausted and just like overwhelmed and not want to do anything. So, simplifying and just having a better plan and plan in place. I wish I could create that habit, but right now it's a poor habit because I'm just kind of I'm just kind of going, just doing things on the fly. Just
yeah, it feels like you're somebody who just shoots from the hip. You just kind of go for it, and like, yeah,
it doesn't feel right though, because I'm like, yo, this is critical stuff, and you know, like our time is limited, so like.
Yeah,
it should be pretty clear what I need to work on, and of course we're doing the right things, but
would you say it's like an issue with prioritization that you're currently facing?
Yeah, it always is, and I don't even want to frame it as an issue because it's always going to be an issue. But it's some of the best advice I've ever gotten from one of the co-founders of Remedo, Neville, who was just wonderful, was, you know, see, he used to love to say sequencing and prioritization. So really, when there's a bunch of stuff that you got going on and you got to do, is you can create a list and you can prioritize certain things. So always be thinking about priorities. That's how I'm trying to act, for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I to switch to the meditation thing, I like that you said 5 minutes is good. Dude, any, like, for long-time listeners of this podcast, they've seen my journey of ups and downs of meditation. It's something I've done for a long time and something I will always be, like, a big champion of. But sometimes it's, like, I put a lot of pressure on myself that, like, when I sit down to do it, I have to do it for, like, 10, 15, 20 minutes. And if I don't reach that limit, like, I failed meditation, you know? And it's like, it's not something you fail or just do. 5 minutes, I've noticed, is the perfect amount in the morning where it doesn't take that much. Like, you get it done, but you actually do get a good bit of benefits. Dude, even like breathing for 1 minute will show you benefits. But like, not putting that pressure on yourself that like you have to do it really has been helping out.
Yeah, it's 5 minutes was a progression from like 3 minutes to start too. So I've been moving up, and yeah, it's just nice knowing that it doesn't have to be a long time. Because even before I was starting like 10 minutes, oh, I can do 10 minutes, I can do 15 minutes. But then 5 minutes in, I'm like, man, this is a grind. And then the whole purpose of it, you know, it failed because I was doing it for too long.
Dude, that is something I've noticed with morning routines, or like any routines in general, is kind of like what you were saying, how you'll have this big shift in your life and it's almost like you have to shift. This is what I've been noticing. Like, your routines almost have to reflect your goals in order for them to really be effective. You can't have the same morning routine for when you were working at Slack versus now you're working on your own company. Like, I'm sure working at Slack was great, but you were working set hours and you were kind of chilling when those hours were done, versus now it's your own startup. You got your goals, but you got to do it. Like, there's no real set, like, oh, you're here for 9 to 5 and that's what your co-founders are like, they decided and set in stone. Like, you're doing it yourself. So that's going to require like a different type of habits or patterns for yourself.
It's like an adjustment period and like a ramp up period. And one of my co-founders has been working on Navi full time now for about a year, a little over a year. And in the same manner, he was telling me when I left my job, hey, you know, it might take a couple months for you to kind of get in a groove. And that's been true for sure. Just trying to find out what works in this new kind of world where my responsibilities are my own and my schedule is my own. And that has great perks because I can go work out when I want to, or if I want to go out and play some soccer in the afternoon, I can go out and not have to worry about this meeting. I can, you know, just let my co-founders know, hey, can we push our meeting back, you know, to this time? So little things like that make they're great. But then it creates these senses of like, oh, well, if I have a meeting at 10 a.m., that doesn't mean I can just wake up at 9:50 sort of thing and just like roll into the meeting. Like, I still got to be prepared for that stuff too. So,
yeah. Your co-founder, is it his or hers first time starting a company? Because that's a really mature like outlook onto that. I'm sure that first time founders don't just think like, oh yeah, you need a second to like chill, ramp up. right. I feel like they're very go.
Facts. No, it's not his first time, and actually this is our second time working together too. So we
have a strong relationship already.
Right, we have a strong relationship, and that's helped a ton, and that's helped tremendously with that period where, you know, he was going full-time on Navi, and I was, you know, at Slack doing, you know, full-time Slack, but, you know, part-time trying to moonlight on Navi, right? So, you know, just trying to, having that shared understanding of, hey, like, he's sacrificing right now while kind of I'm waiting in the wings and knowing, hey, now that I'm here, like, let me do what I need to do right now. And I know maybe my routine is not where I want it to be, but, you know, I can make that sacrifice right now too, knowing that, you know, it's not permanent. It's a temporary thing.
So, that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it.
All right. Now switching over to what you like to do for fun. Oh, sorry. The audio cut for a little. All right. Starting over. Switching over what you like to do for fun. You mentioned a little soccer. I know we've talked about being in soccer leagues. Like, do you play sports a lot?
Yeah. I love sports. I grew up playing sports. I think I mentioned I coached some football. That was one of my, like, I still to this day, probably my favorite job, like, even outside of being a, you know, startup founder. And even though we got paid, you know, like 80 cents an hour, it's still just amazing job. Grew up playing a lot of sports, grew up playing soccer. So it was interesting where, like, sports as a kid, I'm not a fan of how you can only play certain sports, like, because of how the seasons lined up. So, in high school in San Luis Obispo, you cannot play basketball and soccer at the same time because those are both both winter sports. They start they go from November to, you know,
our high school is like that,
February, right? So I grew up playing a lot of soccer and I loved it, but then I forget what happened, probably injuries or whatever. Or I thought basketball was cooler. So then I switched to basketball, and this is great. Also played some football, like I mentioned, but then now it's been fun going back to, like, I want to go play some soccer again because, like, you know, I haven't played in a while, and, you know, going back to the days in Slow, like, love the grass, love just kind of the outdoorsy stuff. So been playing some soccer again recently, and it's just been fun getting back into it, man. It makes me feel like a kid again. And I just love it's really freeing, liberating, just kind of being on a field, being on a court, and just, you know, having fun, having a team around. I love team sports. So, you know, just celebrating with the team, you know, just all that.
Have you won a Volo headband yet?
No, I haven't, but I'm hoping one comes. We didn't make the playoffs last season. We had a subs issue, so
my team's in the chip this Sunday, dude. It's tough.
Let's go.
We're getting ready.
Let's go.
I'm excited. It's gonna be a good game, man. Yeah, I'm excited.
That's fun.
So it seems like coaching has always been a pretty important part in your life. You've liked sports coaching. Now you're starting a company for startup coaching. Is that safe to say that you like teaching people a lot?
Yeah, you know what? It's definitely something. It's definitely something. I don't really make that association much, but I have been kind of realizing it more and more, and people have been tying it together more and more. And yeah, I think looking back on my life, I definitely, you know, enjoy coaching. I even think back, my dad used to coach me in soccer back as a kid. And, you know, my mom would even get involved coaching, more so just kind of yelling and motivating, but coaching still. And, like, you know, my dad was a, you know, a professor, and my mom was a nurse. Huh. So there's always a lot of just, like, kind of helping and, trying to just...
You've always had that, like, caring, helping nature in both your parents.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, team sports around that, too. I always ended up winning coaches' awards and stuff like that on teams. And I know, you know, never thought anything of that. I always thought, oh, that's probably just... It's just like a kind of like a pity award almost. But I'm like, no, you know.
Would have rather MVP, but thanks.
I know. Where's my MVP? Right. Where's my MVP? But, you know, now fast forward today and it's like, yeah, ended up coaching football, like I said, been coaching startups and stuff. And, yeah, coaching's definitely been a big, big part of who I am.
Yeah. Seems to be so. Is there anything else you like to do for fun? Like any hobbies you got?
Nothing too wild. You know, I'm trying to get back into. No, although have you done any skydiving? Would you?
Yeah, I did it when I was 18, on like my 18th birthday around. It's pretty fun. I'd do it again.
You do it again? All right. So yeah. I got to do that.
It's not as expensive as you'd think. It's like, I thought it was going to be pretty price. It's, I mean, depending on the price, it's like $250. I thought it was going to be, you know, $500-700. It's, yeah.
See, so
like
that
it's an experience. It's enough for, you'd pay for an experience.
Do I want to pay, the price isn't that bad. It's just like, do I want to pay that much to be thrown out of an airplane? It's like what I'd have to think about. But yeah, I think I like, you know, poker. Used to play a lot of poker, so trying to get back into gambling games. I think that's been fun. Traveling too. I really obviously COVID and stuff kind of ramped that down, but been trying to get back out, learning. I like going to different cultures, eating food, and trying to learn languages too. I think. It's always fun as well. So things like that. And just trying to find things here. Again, just now that I am not working full time elsewhere and kind of have my own time and schedule, just trying to find different, you know, ways to use my time. I started getting into gardening. Gardening's been nice. Interesting. I wanted to make a salsa this summer. But I didn't yield enough tomatoes, so maybe next summer. But
you're learning. Sure. This is just the first season, man.
It's first season. First season.
It's a game of seasons. I was just talking about that this morning with my mom. My grandpa was a great gardener, and like as of late, I just started realizing gardening's just one of those things that you gotta know that like you get. You don't just get one shot, but you got to plan it in the sense of seasons. Like, right. You don't get one shot because there's always next season. But whatever you do this season, like, make sure you're taking notes and learning because you're just going to repeat the same problems next year if you don't.
Exactly. And it's like, it's not that next season doesn't start tomorrow sort of thing. So, like, all of that stuff you were feeling like, oh, you know, I'm going to do this right next time. Like, you better write it down because – when next season shows up and you're like, dang, like what was that thing that I messed up on last time?
Exactly.
You're going to want to remember. No doubt. Dude,
there's a startup analogy in there somewhere. Could be a course. Could be a course on Navi.
I'm that crazy guy now who's just like everything is a startup analogy now. And I don't want it to be that way, but like that's just how I think.
Dude, if that's your life, then that's your life.
Test everything, right? I'm like, that's what I say now. Test everything. That's what startups is, at least early stage.
Yeah.
Is just, you know, it's you just experimenting and enjoy that, embrace that, you know, process. It's fun. It's part of the growth, you know, when it's part of the growth when you go stand outside in the grocery store and talk to 10 people and it's part of the growth when 9 of them look at you like you're crazy and it's part of the growth when that last one is like, oh yeah, I get it. Like, sure, I'll buy one. And, you know, it's like part of the growth when you're like, oh, I'm going to go, let me try the Sam's Club over here now instead of the Costco over here.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's all just part of the test. So just test it out, try it out, just do it. Nike got it right. Just do it.
Yeah, it's very true. All right, now for the final closing questions. These are more for fun, chill questions. First of all, what kind of music do you listen to?
I'm definitely in that hip-hop genre, Afro beats. I've been loving Afro beats. I'm loving that they're making a run towards the U.S. the last few years.
Yeah, very true.
I think, yeah, I'd say those are my genres. But, you know, growing up in San Luis Obispo, I do have some country in me. I couldn't name any songs.
Really?
But I will. I wouldn't have guessed. I have, not many people would. I do have some folks that will play some good country songs for me every once in a while. But still hip hop. I'm still a hip hop guy.
Yeah,
for sure.
You start singing along to the country stuff. Cowboy hat appears out of nowhere.
Right. I haven't made it that far yet, but
yeah. I guess people who don't know SLO won't know that it's like one of the agriculture capitals of California. Like, right. It's that San Luis Obispo, the college, is known for its agriculture. Yep. So yeah, I mean, country and agriculture.
Turkeys and cows on campus. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Certain parts of the campus smell like shit, like actual shit.
So my dad was a dairy scientist, so he was right in the heart of, you know, going to his office.
Yeah,
you just hit the wave of like manure smell, where it's like, oh, yeah, going to dad's spot, like we hit the smell.
What kind of movie, TV, or like podcast recommendations do you have?
Man, movie, TV, or podcast recommendation? Well, I'll shout out this podcast. Definitely, you got me into listening, and I love the stories that are being shared on here. It's similar to Navi as far as sharing experience and just being able to get those takeaways and that peer support through those shared experiences. So I love what you're doing here.
Thing I like the most, it's like every episode it's a combination of speaking with peers, talking to a friend, and finding a mentor. Like every guest, it's like a mix of all three of those things, and it's been so much fun doing that.
Oh, that's got to be so wholesome. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'll my co-founder Nick Melionis started a podcast with some folks too, and it's called the Startup Help Desk, and it's cool too. It's a nice name, and their whole theme, and I don't want to mess this up, so hopefully folks check it out for themselves, but their whole theme is to, if you know, startup founders or anyone in the space has any questions they want to ask, you know, like a, you know, seasoned startup person or experienced startup person, they can ask, and then on that podcast they'll answer a few of those questions during each episode. So it's kind of like a cool Q&A.
I'll throw that in the show notes so people check it out. It sounds like a similar type podcast, and it would go well.
Yeah, so I couldn't give any other specific recommendations on podcasts. How I built this, stuff like that, you know, some of the more specific or popular ones. There's like a Web3 economy or Web3 creators podcast. I'll send you a link to that one too after this. That's pretty good. But anything that's just in this space of kind of entrepreneurship, innovation, helping people just grow from a like kind of like self-serving entrepreneurial standpoint. Yeah. I love that stuff. And then, yeah, movies. I mean, like, obviously Black Panther, Wakanda Forever is coming out. That should be cool. I wanted to see Black Adam. Didn't see that, but maybe I will. Let's see. Yeah, things like that. How about you? You got any movies? You got coming up or TV shows or something?
Dude, I've been like not watching as many. You know what I saw recently that was pretty sweet? Was the Pixar movie Inside Out. Okay. Have you seen that one?
No.
Dude, it's like, you know how all Pixar movies are like, let's give Cars feelings. Let's give, like, now they gave feelings. It's basically like each of the five core emotions is like a character. Like there's joy, anger, disgust, fear, and what was the last one?
Yep.
And forget sadness. Those are like the five core emotions. And like each one of them was so wholesome. It's such like a good story and stuff, but it did actually, like, I was shocked at how accurate, not shocked, but like it was great to see how accurate the psychology behind it was. And like a big part of the movie is like trying to hold in one emotion, was trying to hold back another. And it's just like, you see the problems of what happens when you don't, like, you're supposed to express all of them, all five, like we all feel them, we all have them. And the more you hold one back, the more it'll just show up in an explosive way somewhere else. And it was like, dude, this is a kid's movie.
Yeah, right.
It was pretty cool.
You're making me want to meditate right now.
Yeah. Let's watch In and Out. I didn't even remember the name. I'm hungry, dude. I think that's why I said In and Out.
Right.
I could go for a burger right now.
There you go. Yeah.
Inside Out, good movie. That's what I saw recently.
You know what I've been watching? I watched, it's on Netflix, Money Heist. It's
Dude, I love that show.
Oh, it's a great show. I've been trying to watch it in Spanish too.
Just La Casa de Papel.
Sí. La Casa de Papel.
Yeah, that Spain Spanish is the best, dude. They're always like, Mexicans don't say joder as much as they do, but they're like every other sentence, they're like, fuck.
Yeah, man, it's cool noticing that difference too, because like for me growing up, you know, it was obviously like Mexican, like Southern American Spanish,
yeah,
is, you know, kind of what we learn and obviously what we're interacting with. And so hearing the kind of the different accents and kind of the whole, like,
dude, like, I love, as far as like the culture thing you were talking about earlier, I really like seeing how the culture differs amongst similar groups. Like for me, something very close to me just being Hispanic is like seeing the different levels of Spanish, or like how the different countries have picked the same kind of food groups but expressed the food differently. Yeah. Like even in Mexico, Northern Mexican food is different than Southern Mexican food.
Right.
And it's just like little things like that is so cool to find out. And you only would find out if you know, enjoy the culture, like try to see what's what, try to go to different cultures.
Exactly. I you know, at San Diego Startup Week, I met someone, and what was cool about San Diego Startup Week too is there's a lot of folks who kind of are cross-border and coming from like Tijuana and stuff, who are, you know, in and have an impact in the San Diego startup community too. So I love that. But you know, we were talking about going to Osaka and like trying some like real mole there, and like, you know, getting some mezcal and stuff. And I'm like, man, that would be.
Dude, that's where I went, and that's what I'm talking about. How like that food from Oaxaca was closer to my dad's country of El Salvador. Like they shared more foods than my mom, who was born in Northern Mexico. It was just like really interesting to see how like. There was like the semblance of, you could tell there were people here before we had borders here. Like they just took similarities from these different sides versus, like the Northern Mexico has more in common with like Texas. People don't really, I looked this up earlier, like cowboys originated from Northern Mexico, but like, because Mexico and Texas were so similarly together, they were just kind of like together. They were like their own thing.
A lot of little facts, you know, like burritos, for example, are not like traditional, you know, like Mexican fare. And then you start getting the history. It makes sense. It's like trying to, you know, wrap that thing up like a big amount of food in a wrap. Like, OK,
that's L.A.
That's America.
It is an American thing. But the funny thing is also like how it ends up influencing both sides. Now I'm sure if you go to Tijuana, they're just going to have burritos because everyone from America comes down and wants some. So they're like, yeah, let's make it.
Exactly. Them. Yeah. I really appreciate it. At some point, hopefully someday I will be somewhere, you know, like Mexico on the coast with a nice bar and grill, you know, open. So, yeah. You know, this is an outdoor shack style setup where, you know, I'm serving up some beers and some grilled tacos and tri-tip because that's the hometown thing. So,
Is this your ride knock to the sunset moment?
Facts. Yep. You'll get the invite. You'll get the invite too. It'll be a
lot. Dude, I'm coming down. I'm coming, dude. That sounds great.
Absolutely.
Oh man, that sounds peaceful.
That's a dream, man. That's a dream.
I don't know what the product is, but that's the Super Mario right there.
I know. Now
the product is all the mushroom is all the companies you've started to get you there and sold.
Right. Hopefully. You know what? In this day and age, in this world, why not be able to go live in rural Mexico for contrived example, and work on my startup knowing that, you know, I'm adding value and, you know, we're growing the same way we would be if I were in an office in San Francisco. Yep. So
totally agree.
That's where my head's at. Absolutely.
Also, last question is, what kind of books are you reading right now?
Another thing I'm not reading anything specifically right now. And that's, again, one of those things where I'm like, man, when's the time going to be where I have time to do this? One of the books I read this a few years ago, and it's probably resonated with me the most since then. And it's a really good book because, it helps with goal setting like tremendously, is Barking Up the Wrong Tree by Eric Barker. I think that's what it's called.
I've heard that.
Barking Up the Wrong Tree, yeah. The way it frames setting goals is like, it just changed my life. And it really wasn't complex. It was like a four-step process, but it just made it so real. It made it outcome focused, like we've been talking about. And so I've been using that still to this day to just try and, like, whenever I get a chance, because I'm just too busy and I wish I did it more, to try and like frame, hey, what I want to accomplish this month, or what I want to accomplish, you know, in the next couple months, and whether it's like personal goal, so like getting back into soccer, like, learning to play pool, like that was something that like I tried to do, or whether it's like, you know, work goals, like I want to get this feature done, or I want to connect with a certain customer profile, you know, setting goals and stuff like that. It's helped tremendously with that. So I definitely recommend that book. Not having a book I'm reading right now.
Yeah. I'll check that out. That's something close to, it's almost like a lifelong journey of learning how to set goals for me so far. I don't know if I'll ever get like the right way down, but I've kind of figured that there is no perfect right way for any one person. You just kind of do what works for you. Like I set goals now, and if I hit the goal, whether I hit the goal or not, if the method in which I did it feels right, I'll keep doing it. If not, I just kind of like tweak the parts that I don't like. But it's more based on like how it feels for me, you know?
I think that's the best way to go about it. Celebrate your wins too, you know?
I could do that more.
Be happy. It's the thing though, right? Me too. Celebrate the wins, feel good about it, and embrace those times where you feel lazy or you feel like you're not accomplishing the things you want. Like
that's a big one, dude. Trying
to just I've been working on that a ton, right? Just trying to tell myself, hey, it's okay. Like, you know, like, oh, you feeling lazy today? You know what? Fine, be lazy. But like, you know, you're going to pick it up that tomorrow or tonight when you're ready to go sort of things. So just trying to embrace those times where maybe I'm not into it and say, hey, it's okay. Like, I'll just get it next time.
To your point on letting yourself be lazy, I think that is so important for anyone. Like, dude, a couple days ago when it was really rainy over here, and you know, like, doesn't really get rainy. It doesn't, like, it's weird. The time just changed, just became right. Different. Like, we're talking about gardening. The seasons are switching, man. It's like rainy, hardly rainy.
I know, right?
San Diego, like, it's just did not feel great. So that's when I was like, you know what? I want to go buy some popcorn. I was like, I'm gonna watch a movie. I'm just chill. Like that you just kind of have to lean into it sometimes, and that will set that reset for you to hit it the next day. Like, I felt so much better and more productive the next day just by leaning into it on one day.
Right. You know, and I don't know why it works, but it does, in my opinion, because of that. It's like just letting yourself enjoy being yourself. And it's like, you know, don't try and fight the fact that you feel, you know, lazy.
Dude, it goes to the feelings. Something. Yeah.
Maybe.
Don't fight the feeling.
Yeah, right. Don't suppress. Feel
it. Yeah.
Don't suppress your feelings. Disney's been on us about this for years. Come on.
Since 2015,
yeah,
baby.
It's a real thing, though. Right. Yeah. Disney figured this out since 2015. It's true. It's something by not suppressing your feelings of being lazy or like not wanting to do something. It just gets me ready for the moments when I am to be ready to do something, to be, you know, as effective and kind of max effort as possible.
Yeah, totally agree. And finally, where can people find you and Navi?
Yeah. Best way to find me, if not, you know, in person on the streets of San Diego, is LinkedIn. I'll share my LinkedIn URL with you. And yeah, you know, I'm big on serendipity too. So, you know, if anyone listening to this or whatever, if you feel like reaching out and you want to talk startups or anything, just please reach out. So LinkedIn, and then like I mentioned, Navi, we're in a weird situation right now, a good situation, but kind of a closed beta with some early adopters and champions. That being said, we have some things in the pipeline, of course, that are geared towards testing out, you know, a broader audience. Folks, you know, regular entrepreneurs and stuff. So I'll share some more, a link to Navi. We're putting together our, a refresh of our landing page and stuff now too, while we're doing the app. So our website is not up yet, but I'll share it once it is.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. And I can totally attest to the serendipity thing. I think we met in line to get food at one of the startup events. Like, we were just talking.
Yeah.
And then we became homies. I've gone to a couple events with you. That crypto one was probably one of the coolest. I learned a lot about, talk about the splitting borders. That one Web3 musician who, like, he does a lot of his, like, music through.
Oh, I love that.
Like, I can't remember. Yeah. Sound XYZ. He does a lot of his music there rather than Spotify. Learned a lot. And his biggest mission is to blend the borders between Tijuana and San Diego, because there's so much culture shared between the two. But there's a, you know, this line drawn from a geopolitical standpoint.
Facts. And you know what? I think Web3 and crypto is a way to enable that sort of cross-border collaboration even further. Again, when you think about not having to, even something as simple as not having to, you know, think about foreign transactions or, you know, foreign exchange, currency exchange and stuff. So it's like, just from that standpoint, but then also from the creator standpoint and the kind of just self-ownership standpoint. You know, I have a friend who's an artist up in LA, a music artist, and you know, he talks about all the time about record labels, and while they are, you know, they're a platform, like, you need them as an artist because of all the resources they provide, it is kind of a monopoly and a kind of one size fits all situation that is not beneficial to the artist. So hearing about, you know, what those folks are doing, I think it was Tutu Lengua.
Yeah.
And, you know, their kind of cross-border collective for artists and running these, you know, shows and events where you can, you know, pay for things with crypto and also get unlock access to things with crypto. I think that's huge because it's just allowing everyone to in particular folks like that to create communities and really create economies around the community, so that in the case that, you know, things really start to grow and go well for them, they're fully leveraged to you know, capitalize on that themselves versus you know, those record labels.
I totally agree. It doesn't feel like the labels are 100% going away anytime soon, but you can leverage the fact that, like, you are independent and already have this massive following off of these other platforms to kind of get in with those labels, and rather than they take everything, you have a couple more bargaining chips on your side.
Exactly. Yeah, and it becomes more of a partnership situation versus like a kind of like a subordinate situation, which oftentimes it feels like happens in that music and artist space.
Totally agree. All right, dude. Well, glad I finally got you on the show. Glad we finally had the conversation. Had a great time. Thanks for coming on.
Same. Thanks for having me, man. I had a great time, and looking forward to continuing to catch up in the future.
Yep. See you around.